Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. My name is Kate Prusser and I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. And joining me tonight, we have a programming note, a little something different. John is not able to be with me tonight. So instead, we have somebody else wonderful from the staff who's joining us, and that is Zach Milkus. Zach Mac.
That could be back for all I know.
We're bringing Milky back. Did I say it right? Milkus?
Yeah.
Milks.
Close enough for rock and roll.
Milkus.
Yeah. But don't say it too many times, otherwise it stops being a word.
Yeah. I was only like four times into it, and it was already getting kind of weird on me.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, your Twitter handle, right? If you want to give people your Twitter handle.
It is exactly that.
Give the people your Twitter handle, Zach.
Oh, sorry. The Twitter handle
is... I'm trying to raise your profile here.
I know, and like add to my like 60 followers.
Yes.
That have expanded exponentially since joining the Lookout Landing staff.
I know. I think it was originally like single digits. It really is.
Yeah, it was like my friend who built my profile for me and then, you know, to other people that pitied me.
One thing I find it charming that even though you are younger than me by kind of a significant margin, you are sort of an old man as far as technology goes, like the wielding of the social medias.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I prefer physical books. You know, I prefer owning actual albums of music, you know, the whole streaming services. You know, they're not really working for me, so I don't know.
I just feel like it could all disappear in a second if it's not something I can physically hold.
Right.
You know, it makes me tremendously nervous, which is funny. Obviously, you should be more nervous of physical objects disappearing than things that are stored in the great cloud because the internet never forgets. But I will say, because for some reason, everything in my life right now is coming back to Showgirls, the movie, the 1995 classic.
Of course.
And this David Schmader, who writes for The Stranger, or wrote for The Stranger, I don't know if he does anymore, they used to host annotated showings of Showgirls, and it was just fantastic. And so they issued a DVD with his commentary on it. I swear it is the funniest thing. And I couldn't find my DVD for a long time, and I went looking online, and obviously streaming services do not carry this.
Right, that's pretty niche.
If they have Showgirls at all. Yeah, exactly. So I had no way to watch it. And now my Mac doesn't have a DVD thingy on it anymore. So
right.
I know
I'm just left
here holding my deluxe VIP edition of Showgirls with no way to watch it.
You could at least just frame it and put it on your mantle, do something with it.
You say it like it's not there already. Well, believe it or not, that is not the first reference to Showgirls I have thought of today or planned to work into the show. So let's get cracking, because it was that kind of a weekend that, you know, forces one's brain to the dark place that is Showgirls and other epic failures.
It certainly
because
did.
What a fail whale of a weekend.
Yeah.
John has taken it to calling it Dedger weekend, which I think, you know, I was going with the very boring, like, Lollapalooza, son of Lollapalooza,
right.
Decaying corpse of Lollapalooza. But Dedger weekend is, I think, pretty fantastic. I know you were at a lot of those games. I was at a lot of those games. None of it was fun. I had no fun.
Almost none of it was fun, in fact. Very, very little of it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, the ceremony was beautiful, obviously. Powerful.
Of course.
I cried. but the actual game part, just to put it in perspective, we entered August 9th with a 31.1% chance, according to Fangraphs, of making the playoffs. And we currently sit at 12.7, and that's after we got the bump from the Orioles series win Currently, I think it was all the way down at like 9% something.
Yeah, I believe that.
Although, honestly, the numbers could have said negative 30 bajillion, and I would have been like, yeah, that totally checks out.
At that point, it was certainly existentially catastrophic to the playoff hopes, or at least it
Absolutely.
felt like it.
It still does. I'm still not over it. So, tell me, I know you were there. Were you there with your dad? Tell me a little of the narrative of your a Dedger weekend.
So I think I'll work my way backwards, because I attended the game on Sunday. I got my Edgar replica jersey. I went with my dad, and he had attended the Griffey replica jersey day, and didn't actually get a jersey. And I don't think that was an uncommon story. It seemed like they
No,
sort of
I went to a
undershot.
couple of the I went to a couple of the Griffey things, and there was nothing, despite getting there very early. There was no joy in Mudville for, which was fine with me because I honestly didn't care that much about, but the Edgar stuff I would have pushed a child over for, so.
Right. So, but fortunately, they expanded their cache of Edgar jerseys, and we got one, and that was excellent. I think, even according to some sources, the quality was a little bit better on the Edgar ones than the Griffey ones. Anyway, we attended the game. The game was a complete clunker. There was very little to cheer about that entire game.
Clunker is
Watching.
such a nice way to describe it, I think. So very, thank you for keeping the podcast PG.
Sure, that's one thing that I can aspire to, at least. But basically, watching Parker Bridwell just savage the Mariners lineup
Let's
through
talk
far
a
too
little
many
bit.
innings.
Let's talk about Parker Bridwell, who we
Let's
lit
not.
up. We lit him up the last time we saw him. This is Parker Bridwell, named like an 80s movie villain in a John Hughes film or something.
Absolutely.
And
And that's a name
just
that stops losing meaning once you say it enough times.
Parker Bridwell. Parker Bridwell.
Either
Yeah.
that or he'll appear in your mirror and come out and murder your lineup.
All I can see is a pair of legs. It must be either Max Posey or Parker Bridwell. Tall, weird looking dude who just we made him look like Chris Sale, like discount Chris Sale.
So that happened. That's
Yeah.
basically all I remember, because by the seventh inning, I was like a couple hot valleys deep and starting to
Good,
feel my
good.
oats a little and, trying to salvage something.
All that could be salvaged out of those games, really.
So anyway, so Sunday, that was a little bit of a bummer, but got my jersey. And seriously contemplated buying a Corey's Brother Players Weekend t-shirt, but abstained. For now, we'll see if that changes.
Good on you.
And okay, so actually, so my Dedger weekend began a little bit in a different fashion than I think than most did, because I was at a bachelor party. My friend was getting married this weekend, so Edgar weekend was kind of preoccupied by wedding festivities. And Thursday night, I was in the middle of the Cascades with very little cell reception, and I happened to check my game day at the exact wrong possible time. In that, I saw Segura hit the homer, I saw Cruz hit the homer, I saw them tie the game, and I saw Edwin Diaz just unravel one little blinking, moving square at a time on my phone. So that was a bummer. That didn't feel good. That wasn't a good start.
I mean, I would even. I'm gonna roll Paxton's start on Thursday into part of Dedger Weekend because that's what really starts it, right? And I was at that game in the Maple Grove. My new Maple Grove t-shirt had just come. I was so excited. And lo and behold, it was, yeah, I don't want to actually talk about it because that makes it seem real.
It does. Kate, where are we at with our Curse of the Amazon? Have we been keeping tabs
Oh,
on
that's
that?
right. I think it's maybe time to dig that up. So if you don't know what we're referring to, Zach and I did a lengthy piece that dovetails the Mariners' struggles with the rise of Amazon in our region, and I just feel like, yeah, it might be time to take another look at that.
It could be, because we were racking our brains. This was, the Haniger injury, the Felix injury, and the only logical explanation is some kind of diabolical curse. Really, it's what it comes down to.
I mean, when
Right.
Thiago Vieira comes in to make his debut, which is the lone good thing that happened in that sucky suckfest of a... It was the Orioles game, right? It was the opening of that series.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he comes in to make his debut. The very first pitch he throws is rocketed back to his face at 100 miles an hour. And they cut to that shot of Service in the dugout.
Head in his hands.
You could see the hair just like when, what's his face? Han Solo goes into the carbonite. Please tell me I got that reference right. Somebody's going to kick my ass so hard if I didn't.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, my first word out of my mouth was going to be Luke. And I was like, no. I'm a bad nerd. So, yeah, it was just looked like his face was slowly freezing but melting at the same time.
Right.
But luckily, Vieira, the blessed one, has got some good reflexes.
He does. Yeah, that was truly remarkable.
Yeah. But that would have been the point at which I was like, I mean, I'm pretty rational about a lot of stuff, but I would have been like, nope. Witch's curse. Find the witches. Everyone, let's fairy tale this. Let's go around from house to house throughout the kingdom and root out the source of whatever is going on here.
Yep. Was about to be like that.
Yeah.
I'm with you. So, I would have got my pitchfork and accompanied you. For
oh,
sure.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the beginning. I think things are difficult from there on. Things go bad to worse, and then they kind of crest in that terrible series to the Orioles, or the first game of the Orioles. And it really felt like they might not win a game ever again, right?
It did kind of feel like that. You know, certainly after my recap on Monday night, that was a little dark. It was a dark space.
It was a dark space, and if you don't know what we are referring to, run, don't walk to your computer or mobile device. Find Zach's recap from Monday night about that's a riff on Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, and read it because it's delightful. And that's what we have. We have to have the fires in our little hobo trash cans have to burn brightly in these dark, dark times.
They do.
And that
they
was
do.
Certainly a very nice log tossed upon the fire. Warmed my heart.
Yeah, well, when staring into the void, anything helps.
When staring into the void, make pastiche out of it. So yeah, that was for me, that was it's a comfortable place, right? Like losing. Oh, okay, losing Mariners. I know the losing Mariners. I know how to write about the losing Mariners. I know how to think about them. I know how to be disappointed by them. So there's almost like a weird comfort that takes over.
Yeah, there is a little bit.
But there's also just, I mean, it was a tremendous sadness to me that they did this on Edgar weekend, that they couldn't pull it together and play better for him.
He doesn't deserve that.
He doesn't. And I think my low point definitely had to be just hearing boos ring out at Safeco, which I said on Twitter, maybe don't boo. I don't know what, I mean, I understand it as a cathartic expression. Because it's frustrating, and I was frustrated, and I was sad, and it's like, well, I can't break down and cry right here in Safeco, so I'll just boo, which is understandable. But just for the players, and you know, the idea of being there on that field and hearing that ring out is just, and the idea of Edgar hearing that on his weekend was something about that felt bad to me.
I agree 100%. I think it's. Yeah, it's just tough. I understand the emotion. I understand the frustration, especially after this complete tease of a season in so many ways, where just when they're about to turn a corner, things fall off a cliff. But yeah, that's a tough one. I would not boo. I would not advocate for that. I would boo the booers. or I would, you know, pretend like I'm a ghost, you know, and join them in their cacophony of phantasms, you know, but I would not, I don't condone it. I agree.
They're saying Boo Earns. Boo
Yeah,
Earns.
or maybe Boone. Maybe
Boone.
they're
Moon.
living in the past, living out their memory of a distant time, you know.
Or maybe clamoring to get him back in the lineup, because I feel like he could have done a little more than some of the bats we saw.
Frosted tips and all.
Maybe that's what the world needs. I mean, it worked for Team Puerto Rico in the WBC.
Oh, did it ever?
That's what they should do, is they should all just undertake some horrible fashion choice together.
Right.
So that was my low point, although I would also say, just watching them blow that 5-1 lead and knowing that it was Andrew Moor, who I like a lot as a pitcher and as a person, and just feeling like, obviously he did not pitch well, but the situation that he was put in there was one that I feel was, well, first of all, Andrew Moor has a really specific warm-up routine, right? He's a driveline kid. There's a very prescribed practice that he goes through in getting ready for his starts, in doing the long toss, in warming up his arm. He's never pitched out of the bullpen. I think he maybe has one bullpen start in his, or one bullpen appearance at, in like an emergency in his professional
Yeah, I
career.
was gonna ask, like, when has he ever? And I guess
One in
once.
college because Pat Casey got super mad at whoever was pitching, and just threw him in there, and it was kind of in a losing effort anyway.
I see.
So mismanagement, I think, of the player, and then you put him in there and just like really just let him hang out there to dry and
Which was so odd after pulling who was that?
Gonzalez.
Gonzalez so fast. You know, he basically got through 4 innings and I think was into the fifth. And they were just kind of like, well, you know, I think you've been good so far. Let's not have you screw it up out of nowhere and let's let Andrew Moor have a shot. But then they didn't have that same expediency getting him out when he got into trouble either, which is a disservice to the team. It's a disservice to Andrew Moor. You know, I think it's just kind of a bummer all around.
And a disservice to the fan. And I understand if the fans were booing. I don't know that the fans who were booing were necessarily making the differentiation between I am booing this bullpen management and I am booing this player.
I am booing the bullpen management specifically and nothing
Yes.
else. Do not misconstrue my boo.
Which, I mean, maybe it was. I felt like booing it. It was
Yeah.
not, I thought, at all an effective way. And maybe you're thinking, it's early in the series. You don't want to overtax the bullpen. We've got to lean on Pagan pretty heavily. I'm worried about him getting overused. But I mean, you have a lead finally. Do what you have to do to protect it. He obviously didn't have it in that particular situation. Don't press on with that, with your 23-year-old has pitched at three different levels this year. Like, just don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, and I think that also kind of feeds into just my low point or low points with that series, which is just the bullpen in general. You know, after how dominant they've really been since the All-Star break, I pulled it up. They had the third fewest runs in baseball allowed in the month following the All-Star break. You know, right up to the Angels series where they just kind of imploded, and now they have allowed 17 earned runs in 5 games or 6 games, where it
And
just
who,
it all kind
where
of
did the
exploded.
majority of the, where did that come from? Because it wasn't, I mean, it was every person failing in their
Oh yeah.
role.
Yeah, completely. I mean, everybody. It was, you know, Diaz, it was Pazos, it was Zick, it was all these guys that have been so solid so consistently that it just kind of the floodgates opened up at exactly the wrong time.
And we all, okay, so you're gonna give the goat of the series to the bullpen for just totally letting us down.
Yeah, they can share it.
They can share it among themselves.
Yeah, distribute it as they see fit.
Each of you gets a tiny part of my disdain. I was disappointed in the bats, which just, aside from the game where they charged out to the 5-1 lead, just really did not, didn't string together hits, didn't pick up their pitchers, didn't look lively against a pitching staff. The Angels have a powerful offense. Their pitching staff is hot garbage, or it should be.
Yeah, Ricky
And they just
Nolasco was like,
Ricky
Ariel Miranda took my
Nolasco.
home run lead. You know, I got to get it back. You know, hold my beer. Yeah.
And then the Orioles too. So moving into the Orioles series, things got a little improved somewhat. Taking the series certainly is important against another one of the crazy million teams in the AL wild card race. So certainly important, but man, that didn't feel like a series win to me. Did it feel like that to you?
It's just they were in just such a hole coming out of that Angels series, and that was just so demoralizing. And then the first game of that series being so demoralizing really compounded that. And I guess it's not like the other two games they played fine. You know, Tuesday and Wednesday, the bullpen returned to form. They scratched out enough runs to basically make it worth their while. But yeah, it was tough. It was just, I think that the momentum isn't quite back yet.
I think that that is, yeah, it's just none of them felt like decisive, convincing wins. Neither of the two, I should say, because there were only two. We kind of wiggled past. Who was it who pitched on Tuesday? I was
Let's
at
see.
that
Yesterday was
game.
Gonzalez. The day before was Miranda, wasn't it?
Miranda, for them, who pitched for them?
Oh, Wade Miley on
Wade
Tuesday.
Miley, that's right. And we made Wade Miley. Wow, that's a surprisingly difficult sentence to
We
say.
made Wade Miley.
We made Wade Miley look like, well, not Wade Miley,
No, he
which was
looked good.
distressing. Yeah, and it took some like late inning pushes against their, again, pretty poor bullpen in order to be able to get past. And then Wednesday, a game that should have been, it's Ubaldo Jimenez. Like, now that Jared Weaver is retired, I feel like he takes over as the punchline in bad pitcher jokes, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought his first fastball of the game was at 87 miles per hour. And I was like, oh no. And he ended up getting it
Oh.
back up to like 93 a little later on, but it was, yeah.
Yeah, I
He
mean
doesn't have it anymore.
that kind of variation in your velocity tends to mean like you're using a d bunch of different release points, which means your mechanics aren't solid. Like you really kind of want to be within a few ticks of each other when you're throwing the same pitch. I don't know. Maybe he was throwing some pitches I don't know the names of, but that seems like a pretty big variance.
Yeah, he was, yeah, I think throwing a little bit of everything. You know, we saw like a fastball, a changeup, a slider, a splitter, and none of them were particularly effective, right? The smorgasbord approach.
And we'd see people get on base or they'd do a little bit of something, but somebody else had made an out. By that point, it was two outs, and then they just couldn't scrape across more than one or two runs, which, again, I say, Ubaldo Jimenez,
Yeah,
who I'm sure is a nice person, but not a great
yeah,
pitcher.
it did end up coming together a little bit, I think, because they were starting to make hard contact, you know, sprinkling in throughout the game, and then Alonso had his homer, and it did come together a little bit in the middle of the game to chase him, but you know, you gotta jump on him faster than they did. There's no
Yes.
question.
And build your nice lead and maybe have it be more than, maybe have it be not a save situation after your closer has pitched the night before. Because ho hot diggity did Diaz look terrible.
Yeah, I realize I misspoke when I said the bullpen did well, with the exception of one particular inning at the end of that game where Edwin Diaz came in. The bullpen did pretty well that series.
Yeah, I mean, can we? I know Emilio Pagan is your guy. Do you want to throw him a little bit of love?
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk about his three-pitch inning.
Oh, yes! Let's talk about that.
The definition of efficiency. That was pretty cool to watch, where he's just pop up, pop up, pop up out of it.
I
Yeah,
know. If
sit
we
down.
if we've got an immaculate inning, I think there's got to be something more intense that we can give to that. It's the Emilio inning. We'll have to call it the Emilio inning, I think.
Yeah, I think we can innovate some kind of interesting nomenclature that does it justice.
Yeah, we can make that happen. Very powerful.
Yeah, so Emilio was great. He pitched the night before, pitched 2 innings, and was great. He's just, I just, I like him. He's got good stuff. Throws up in the zone, benefits from the outfield defense and general marine layer that Safeco offers, and I think he's a good fit, and he's got good stuff, and I'm really happy to see him succeed.
Me too. And he does a lot with like not the overpowering velocity. Sits like 92, 95, depending on where he is. It's a good firm fastball, but it's not like the blow you away 98 volatile fastball,
Right, it's a little
right?
bit deceptive because it has, rise,
The spin.
the
Tons of
spin,
spin.
sure, that really causes batters to swing under it almost all the time. We see that happen almost every at bat.
It's such a nasty pitch that he is just able to like spot it all around, and it's another argument that you don't have to be one of these crazy flamethrowers to be effective. You have to have velocity, but it doesn't have to be the super high triple digits power arm necessarily. If you can be deceptive, get the spin, and
Totally.
it's great to have the ability to have him do 2 innings.
Yeah.
He's pitched 3 innings.
He's pitched 4 innings. I
He's
mean,
pitched
they've
four.
had him do everything. And this is a guy that really at every level in the minors was like a late
A
innings guy.
closer.
Yeah,
Yeah.
going back to college.
Yeah.
So great that he's able to do that.
Yeah.
Hopefully we don't overdo that, but it's nice to see him succeed in those situations.
I was very nervous when I saw him coming into the game, and I'm getting very concerned about overuse of him. So that 3-pitch inning was just, thank you, Emilio.
Yep.
That was super great.
It was.
So Emilio is a bright spot. The other bright spot that I kind of want to cover in Mariners land a little is the women in baseball event that the Mariners did on Tuesday. And I know you were
I
there.
was there.
I was there. We got to see LL alum Meg Rowley moderate a panel of women from all different aspects of baseball, which I thought was really cool to pull someone who works on the communication side, like Kelly Monroe, somebody who works in the analytics department, which I feel like there's still very much a belief that like the stat guys are, guys,
Right,
that
it's the
analytics
Jonah Hill
departments are.
mold.
Yeah, exactly. And it was cool to listen to Sarah Gellis talk about how Moneyball did inspire her, but it was like, oh, hey, this is a thing that I could do with baseball, this sport that I love, and then stats, which I also love. And I just thought that was so cool, the idea that Moneyball could be a pathway for somebody, because books are democratic, right? Anyone can pick up a book and read it.
But not everybody can watch an Aaron Sorkin
I mean, personally,
screenplay. I can.
I mean, we
Of
could
course.
say you physically can, but as far as me thinking about other things I can do with my life during that time, yeah. So that was cool. I was most taken by Amanda Hopkins, who does the scouting for the Four Corners region of
Yeah.
for the Mariners. I thought she had amazing practical things to say and really started to get interested in scouting and the idea of like potentially going to scout school or something,
Yeah, which
because
is a
I
thing
really
that I
love
just learned
that.
existed.
Yeah, I've been reading all these diaries. Ben Lindbergh did one for Grantland. That's great. Just a great glimpse into it if anyone wants to read about it or learn a little bit about what goes on at scout school. So it's cool to see with all the different perspectives that were presented. And of course, Shannon Dreyer, aka the Queen. She represented, I think, in a lot of ways, that first wave of women who came through and kicked down the door so a lot of the rest of us can enter. So that was deeply cool, and I am deeply proud to be a Mariner fan, and just so grateful to how the whole thing, for how the whole thing came off.
Yeah.
And if you missed it and want to see it, it's on the Mariners Facebook that it was live streamed. And it's, there's a recording of it there. All right. Yeah. So moving on. We have some news. Christian Bergman cleared waivers, which honestly, I was a little questionable about whether he was going to do or not.
Yeah, he's shown ability to pitch semi-competent major league innings, and he's definitely could find himself back on this roster in a long relief type role. Could see him when rosters expand potentially.
If Christian Bergman had not been a Seattle Mariner, I feel like Cherry would have claimed him.
Yeah, right. He's like exactly the mold. Like, he is the quintessential DePoto long reliever.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason he went out and got him. So I don't know. Jerry's just always ready to pounce on something. In fact, I just saw, I think we just signed somebody else.
Really?
Yeah, somebody who got assigned to Double A. Double A is hurting right now because they've taken so many of the pitchers from Triple A that now they're moving guys in to do spot starts. Everyone in Tacoma right now is a long reliever. Nobody's pitching over four innings, which I feel like is, I don't know about that as a strategy. Chase DeYoung has been sent down to Double A Arkansas, which now makes sense to me. Like, they don't want him pitching as a long reliever.
Right.
They want him pitching, you know, as many innings as he can and staying stretched out. So his demotion, it wasn't really a demotion, I don't think, but that makes a little more sense to me.
Reallocation.
I still don't know what they're doing with Moore and why they have him on the similar pitch limit. Like, so I don't know what that does mentally to guys. Like, oh, I'm just going to go out and pitch my four innings and hope for a call to Seattle. Is that inspiring for them? Maybe. Because all they have to do is pitch their four innings well and know that they have a shot for being called up.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, if you acquit yourself in that capacity, you know, the team is going to have a need for them when the rosters are expanded in September, when they need some artillery out of the middle of that bullpen to help channel them through some games after some dubious starts, you know, they're going to be needed in that role.
Let's talk about just how dubious those starts are, because I tweeted out something today that Casey Bogoslaw tweeted that was about WAR by pitchers for the month of July into August, I think it was, the last 30 days. And the Mariners are second worst, next to only the Chicago White Sox, who, as we know, had a fire sale and now have a fan pitch and inning contest, I believe, is how they're doing it there.
Right. That's one way to do it.
Yeah. So this is troubling. And as we know, the Mariners are about to head out on leg two of the road trip from hell. So they had their brief respite at home where they returned from the road and apparently had a road hangover that they just didn't wake up from until the last couple days. And now they're heading back out for Tampa Bay, Atlanta, the Yankees, and another trip to Baltimore.
Fun times ahead.
See, last week we did the podcast and I was all full of hope and flowers and ideas of Edgar Weekend. And I was like, oh, the Angels, they handled the Angels when they went to the Angels last time. I'm not worried about this. Tampa Bay, I'm not worried about Tampa Bay. I don't think they're contenders. And now I look at the Mariners, I'm like, whoa, I don't know if you guys are contenders.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Fortunately, I think it'll be a little bit of a soft landing in theory because Tampa has been cold. They've been really cold. They've lost, 10 of their last 13 games? And they also weirdly haven't been scoring runs. Like, Team Dinger down there have scored, you know, over four runs one time in all of those 13 games, right? So suddenly they're having issues too.
I am looking up right now to see how they came out today because I know that they were involved in sort of a struggle. Oh, yep, they lost to the Blue Jays today.
All right.
They are now 60-63.
Oof.
They are
How the
on a real
mediocre have become more mediocre, as the old adage goes.
Oh, the American League. This is they'll write stories about us this year. Dominic Leone got the win. Good for you,
Ah,
Dominic
good
Leone.
old Dom, hanging in there.
Little lion man, I remember you. Yeah, they are on a cold, cold, cold streak. But the Mariners have also been on a fairly cold streak, and not just with our terrible pitching and okay bullpen that occasionally sometimes little parts of it catch on fire. We all have to run around and put it out. But Ben Gamel has been rough lately.
Yes, he has. He's seen the BABIP gods kind of turn their shoulder on him.
He did not make the pro. He shaved the beard, maybe, and they were
They
unhappy.
were
They were
unhappy.
displeased.
Yeah, maybe he also stopped sacrificing a sporadic chicken, and
Yeah.
then things just fell from there. I don't know.
He has one of the 10 lowest OPSs in the majors over the past month.
Yikes.
He is ice cold. I like Ben Gamel. I think he will get it back together. But
Yeah.
Mitch Haniger is sitting there, all unlacerated now. And I'm wondering if maybe they option Gamel back to Tacoma and bring up Haniger. Something's got to happen to bring Haniger up, and I don't think they can just leave Haniger if he is officially not on the DL. They either have to option him or bring him up, I think.
Right.
I don't
His
think they want
rehab's got to
him.
be almost up. And it's kind of this
Yeah.
weird limbo where it's not quite roster expansion, but he's also going to be done with rehab.
He's also hitting in
He
Tacoma.
is. Yeah.
Yeah, and he looks pretty comfortable in the batter's box.
Right. Which
And
is more than I think any of us could say after getting hit in the face with a plus 90 mile per hour fastball, like ever again.
he had such a nice face too.
Yeah.
It's all messy.
Poor guy.
It actually looks fine. I've seen it, and he's. I wonder if when he comes back up, he's wearing the full flapped helmet,
Yeah, I noticed
the protective
Heredia
helmet.
started wearing that too.
Yeah, Heredia is no dummy.
No, he's
No
not.
dummy. So we've got that coming up. The Rays all along have been kind of propped up by like three players, right? Like Lomo, Corey Dickerson,
Sousa.
and Sousa. Yeah, who all of a sudden was like, "Hey, what happens if I just don't strike out all the time?"
Good things happen.
But when you look at any of those three players, you don't necessarily see like, "Hey, this is super sustainable," right?
No. And again, they kind of tend to live and buy, live and die by the dinger, right? They have how many guys over 20 home runs? Like a lot, like half their lineup. And sometimes those happen, sometimes they don't. I don't know. Is their lineup better than the Mariners? Probably not, but who knows?
I would say I would be sad if it was because they've spent like what a quarter of what the Mariners have spent on their lineup.
Yeah.
So it would be really sad if they were. That would be sad.
Yeah, but they've been sneaky successful.
They have been. So this is and it's going to be such a tough road trip that is going to be Tampa Bay. They need to take care of business there. Go into Atlanta, take care of business there, and then whatever happens, happens in New York and Baltimore. I don't think New York is quite on the tear that they were on when we saw them. It seems like Aaron Judge has maybe come a little more earthward.
He has. And so has Aroldis Chapman, it seems like. I've been seeing he's blowing saves, or has been.
Yeah. So there should be, and remember the Yankees were kind of fringe to begin with.
Right.
They have made the thing about the Yankees is they've made a lot of
They
moves.
have.
They've made a lot of moves to get to be a better team, and they're going to be playing at home, and I anticipate that being very difficult, and I anticipate our pitchers in those tiny, tiny parks of the AL East
That's what
struggling
scares
pretty
me, is
hard.
these fly ball rates are not gonna look well in, Camden Yards or New Yankee Stadium. It's a little
Nope.
dubious.
So what we're hoping beyond hope is that we can just get some serviceable innings out of our pitchers, and the offense is going to have to step up hugely. We need Nelson Cruz to be Nelson Cruz. We need Kyle Seager, despite having apparently lost 12 pounds to a stomach bug, to continue hitting as well as he has been.
Yep. Is he going to be
Although,
back for the series? Do we know? I assume he
that's
is.
what they're
Yeah.
saying. Yeah, that's what they say. So we hope, but stomach bugs, they are pesky and tricky. And it's, I think, unrealistic to expect that he's going to be up to snuff or up to where he was right away. It takes a while to recover from these things. There's terror on the horizon. The terror comes mostly from the rotation, slash the pitching, slash the bullpen, whatever.
Slash the offense when they don't score,
Slash the offense. Yeah, the
slash the
terror is
fans when they show
everywhere.
up and start booing.
The terror is everywhere.
Yeah.
It is the calls coming from inside the house. Is there anything that we can be hopeful about with the rotation, or anything that we have seen that is, or with the rotation or the bullpen, is there anything, any glimmer of hope that we have to offer fans?
I think what gives me hope is just really when this bullpen is on and when it's used correctly, they're pretty lights out. And they have the ability to get you certainly 4 innings, maybe 5 innings, depending on who, how kind of the bridge guys are doing. And that gives you flexibility with how solid they've been and how shut down they've been when they're on. It gives you some leeway.
It does. I would like to see, man, I've been a big fan of Casey Lawrence, but he had a couple of those meltdowns. I'm not sure if you can trust him with a lot of innings right now, which stinks because there was a time where he was pitching 4 or 5 of them where he was just looking unhittable. Maybe he just needs the Emilio adjustment, whatever happened to him when he got sent down to Tacoma and then came back up breathing fire. I don't know. But we do have Emilio. Emilio has the possibility to go multiple innings. That feels okay. I am much cheered by, and I know that things fell apart for him in the 5th inning in his last start, but I really liked what I saw from Marco Gonzalez in his start. No, he's not going to strike a bunch of people out, but he's getting ground ball outs, and like, God, my whole kingdom for a ground ball out. I love ground ball outs.
Yeah, and he picked up, I think, 3 double plays
Yeah, well,
yesterday that were.
it was two behind, it was two turned behind him.
Okay.
Before that, he'd only ever had 3 in his entire major league career.
Right.
So
So
that
if this
was.
could be more of a trend, that would be very helpful because he was getting very timely ground balls yesterday.
He sure was. And his stuff has, his stuff is really hard to analyze because there's so little information on it. Because he just has little scattered innings here and there.
Right.
So it's not super helpful to look at, but he has been classified as a fly ball pitcher. But I see him, and especially with the stuff he's got working low in the zone with the sinker, with the change,
Right.
that definitely seems to be what he's able to produce is a lot of ground ball outs and a lot of weak contact as batters reach down to try to flip that into the air.
Right, and we saw that a bunch
Sometimes.
yesterday.
Yeah, sometimes it's going to hurt him. It fell, I think it was Caleb Joseph who had the really, really dumb hit.
Yep.
So
He did have
dumb.
a dumb hit.
It was super dumb. Just a little, excuse me, swing off the end of the bat that happened to fall, which shouldn't happen in our outfield. Things shouldn't fall. But once in a while, it's going to happen because baseball's dumb.
Yeah.
I think, he's still building back from TJ. He's still adjusting to being a starter again. I liked what I saw as far as he's got 3 solid pitches that he can throw for strikes.
Yep.
He's got the sinking fastball, the curve, and then the very excellent changeup. He's able to get strikes and spot the curveball. He can't make mistakes with it. When he does, it gets punished. But I didn't see that many. I saw him make more mistakes with the fastball trying to get back into counts, which was, I think, what happened with the Gentry double or triple.
Almost home run, but triple.
Yes, that would have definitely made things look a little differently if that had been a whatever it was, 3-run home run instead of
right
just the damage that it
but
did.
But also in there was the, I think they called it a wild pitch, but it could have been a pass
ball. That was a pass ball, and you
I
know,
thought
that's that
what
was
it looked
absolutely
live.
A pass ball, just between his wickets.
Right, it was through the wickets. And so, you know, it's not like he's ever going to miss horribly. And in fact, we saw he was really able to move around the zone pretty effectively.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of room for encouragement with Marco.
And I think that he adjusted really well to not getting the low strike called, which has been a difficulty across the league.
For sure.
Is certain pitchers, especially if you're not sort of one of those upper tier level guys, you're not getting that call. You're not getting the bottom of the strike zone. And he's going to have to go out there every time and work it and try to earn it. And I think that as he pitches more in the league and umpires get to know who he is as a pitcher, he's going to start earning that strike zone because they're going to know he's not just up there throwing garbage. He's working his way. He's a command control guy. Mm-hmm. So if there is some little bit of hope to have, that's, I think, where we find it. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, and it's potentially going to be really bad.
We'll see. We shall see.
But that's the thing. It's like I was sitting here thinking, well, the Edgar weekend was going to be so great because everything was just going to line up and the stars and, you know, and that turned out the way it was. I think somebody on Twitter called it the Red Wedding Part 2, which...
Spoilers.
Definitely how it felt.
Yeah, it did. It felt pretty catastrophic.
It did, but it's over now.
It's over. Onward and upward to the East Coast.
It's over. Onward and upward and outward to the filthy, stinky, hot East Coast.
Yep. And to the filthy, stinky state of Florida. No offense, Florida.
Some offense. A lot of offense, Florida.
A lot of offense.
Did you ever see the thing of the minor league? I found it on Mike Marjama's Twitter, our new backup catcher. He's in Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And I guess when he was playing for a team down there, I can't remember who it was, whatever Rays affiliate it was, there was a 10-foot-long gator in their dugout one day.
Cool.
Hashtag Florida problems.
Great. Like the gator going to come in and pitch some relief or something? Or what's the...
Oh, man, Jerry DePoto's got that gator on the phone right now.
Yeah, bet the gator's cheap. Just a small mammal. After
gator
does well.
Has tons of options.
Gator has options. Gator's going to gate. And the haters, well, accordingly, they will hate.
Hate.
Yep.
Now I'm picturing a gator dressed up like Taylor Swift dancing around, and it's really delightful. All right, we're going to take a break. I'm going to spend a little more time with that mental image. And when we come back, we will answer your Twitter questions. Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? Are you seeing it your way? On the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. And we're back. All right. Now is the time on the Lookout Lightning podcast where we take your questions. So, let's see. Some good ones today. I asked for questions about books because both Zach and I like to read, right? That's fair to say.
It is. Just not these books. But we'll get to that in a second.
Alright. So Patrick Dubuque at EUQBud asks, if James Fenimore Cooper had written a novel about baseball, would the sport have survived? Now, Zach, were you not forced to study the literary works of James Fenimore Cooper?
You know,
Cooper?
I never did, and I don't even think I saw the Daniel Day-Lewis movie.
The Last of the Mohicans?
Yeah.
Is that, I believe that's what you're referring
to. That's the one.
I really only know James Fenimore Cooper because of fantastic, one of my favorite pieces of literary criticism ever, which is Mark Twain's takedown of James Fenimore Cooper's description of Native Americans. And he talks about the Cooper Indian and how it possesses, he possesses, well, basically it isn't it, because that's how how clumsily and ham-handedly Cooper writes about them, how they seem to have these powers like nothing else, because they're not actually fully realized characters, because they are just really, and I think Mark Twain would have gotten along very well in our world.
His tweets
nowadays
would have been fire.
Oh my gosh, he would have had some good tweets, wouldn't he?
Oh yeah.
I imagine like him and Joyce Carol Oates would kind of go at it a little, right?
Isn't Joyce Carol Oates still alive?
Love... Well, yeah, but she's not good at tweeting.
Not a refined Twitter presence like, at 95 years
no,
old.
No, I mean, she just said, she says a lot of stuff that it's like, Joyce, maybe, baby, step away. But I would have loved to see those two go at each other a little. But anyway, so in addition to all his other sins, Fenimore Cooper is also known for his terrible, terrible plot holes. Let's see if I can find literary sins of James Fenimore Cooper. Oh, it's like one of the first things when you type in literary, Fenimore Cooper's literary offenses is the actual name. Yes. He was taking apart Deerslayer by it. He says, a tale shall accomplish something and arrive somewhere. But the Deerslayer tale accomplishes nothing and arrives in air.
Oh, no.
Yes. He's talking about the rules of fiction and how Deerslayer breaks all of it. Number 10. They require that the author shall make the reader feel a deep interest in the personages of his tale and in their fate, and that he shall make the reader love the good people in the tale and hate the bad ones. But the reader of the Deerslayer tale dislikes the good people in it, is indifferent to the others, and wishes they would all get drowned together.
So, nice.
It's just overall, if you haven't read it, it's an excellent essay. Again, one of my favorite pieces of writing ever, probably, and just deliciously wicked. So I don't know what that has to do with baseball.
You know what does have to do with baseball, but... tangentially, is that James Fenimore Cooper... lived in Cooperstown, New York.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was related to the Coopers of Cooperstown. That doesn't seem so far off, does it? I mean, I know it's a common last name, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It could be.
I'm going to do some research on this.
It would seem like, you know, I mean, how many Coopers there were there in Cooperstown?
Let's swing from
presumably
one end
two at
of...
one point.
Let's swing from one end of literary offenses into another. Brittany at Brittany Bush wants to know, does Jeffrey Eugenides dislike women, or is it just me who thinks that? Women, and now I remember where I was coming with my Showgirls reference, women in Jeffrey Eugenides novels, much like Native Americans in James Fenimore Cooper's tales, and much like women in Showgirls, who seem to have been built off of a concept that women together do nothing but talk about their breasts, eat chips, and do each other's nails. And those are like the three defining qualities of womanhood, according to, and female bonding, according to the movie Showgirls. I don't know that Jeffrey Eugenides has ever met a woman, and I will leave it at that. Kyle Rancourt wants to know, why do people book shame others? And I feel like this is something where you can really weigh in, Zach.
Yeah, well, personally, you know, I would never book shame anybody.
I read a lot of, just escapist novels, and I've found, especially during, baseball season right now, I am very into reading books about people taking vacations I neither have time for nor can afford.
Fair enough.
So I've been just reading a lot of like very fluffy novels that I feel like I would have turned my nose up at a few years ago. but right now are doing some very important work for me, in that I have bad days where I have to write about and think about and talk about the Mariners and interact with people online about the Mariners who are very unhappy, some of whom want to take their unhappiness out on me, clearly, as I have a lot to do with the team. And yeah, sometimes it's just nice to just curl up in bed and read about somebody falling in love on a Grecian island. It feels really good.
I prefer Italian islands in my romance novels.
Yes.
But I'd say escapism is totally fine. There is a time and a place for that. There is.
Don't let anyone book shame you. They just are insecure about their own feelings. Or they just don't understand what you're needing from that book at that time. All right, our next question comes to us from Poor Man's Press Box at Safeco 330. What's the best book about baseball you've ever read? What are the most underrated and most overrated?
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this, and I haven't read too many baseball books, I think, or at least not recently. I read a Sandy Koufax biography, like, a long time ago. I actually grew up reading Matt Christopher sports stories.
Oh,
could not get enough of those. So there are some that really, like, stuck with me out of that in my formative reading years. So would recommend to any child cutting his or her teeth and interested in some kind of, I don't know, interesting fictional sports-related stories. Those are good.
I cannot tell one Matt Christopher book from the other, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, you could pick one.
It's all the boy who couldn't do a thing. That's every book, right?
Yeah, there's some, like, supernatural elements in some of them, which are good. There's some kind of poignant family connections. Like, there's one that I remember where, like, this kid, he's, like, the shortstop on his little league team, and he's really good, and he wants to be an all-star. But then this other team shows up, and they have, like, a girl who's their shortstop, and she's, like, really good, and they have this, like, intense rivalry from afar. And then it turns out that they're twins. So, you know, some touching, you know, really touching, meaningful, sentimental, young adult sports fiction.
You got a spoiler alert that, man. what have I read? I've read very few fiction, or at least none that jump to mind, fiction baseball books. I have read a lot of nonfiction baseball books. Obviously, I like, you know, the classics, like, it's only weird if it only just has to work, whatever, the Ben Lindbergh one, the
story of my life,
where they own the Sonoma Stompers. That one was good, very readable. I really enjoyed, actually, this book of essays by Jay Gould, who was a professor at Harvard for a long time, but a very avid Red Sox fan on the side, and he just wrote beautifully about baseball, and there's a collection of his essays at the library. I would say that's maybe both my favorite and the most underrated. Moneyball was, I think it must have been just because there was so much hype, and you have to have read Moneyball, right? Like, everybody read Moneyball. Well, I didn't read Moneyball when it came out. And I did not see the movie, and I sort of just dimly kind of, I read the Wikipedia summary, and I was like, it's probably good for now. And then I never got around to reading it, because it was one of those things where I was in grad school at the time, and I was like, I don't have time for this, but...
But time is money.
Eventually, I will read it. Yeah, that's the new market inefficiency, is reading Wikipedia summaries instead of actually reading the book and then faking like you've read it for years. So when I started doing this job, I was like, oh, I actually have to sit down and read Moneyball. And I was like, that's it? But I don't think that's Moneyball's fault. I think that's the fact that Moneyball is like the baseball book, right? It's something anybody can name. And I don't know, I was just like, oh, well, that was nice.
Yeah.
But it didn't, and also it didn't feel revolutionary anymore at that point. Mm. I have Jay Jaffe's Cooperstown casebook actually at the library waiting for me to go pick it up right now, so I'm super excited about getting into that. I'm looking forward to a big Edgar chapter, and if there's not, I will print one out and pin it into the book.
You could just take a compilation of Lookout Landing articles that you've written over the past forever and just stick it in there. You already have material.
If I print them out, I think that that would be equal to the size of the book, honestly. It would be very suspicious when a book that is supposed to weigh, you know, 6 ounces comes back through weighing a pound and a half. Mm-hmm. Bevel apologist Peter at HD Robot wants to know, have you read The Stars My Destination? If not The Stars My Destiny, I don't know what that is. Did you Google it?
I did. I looked it up. It looks interesting, but I have not heard of it. It is called The Stars My Destination, a science fiction novel by Alfred Bester.
The Star Is My Destination.
The Stars My Destination.
Okay. I've not heard that.
Yeah.
But I will go and Google. So, yes, you win, Peter. You University of Chicago educated. Yeah,
you
did.
You out-book nerded the book nerds.
Yeah, out-book nerded us. Congratulations. Come get your prize at the next Lookout Landing meetup. Do you have anything that you've read that's not baseball lately that you want to signal boost, Zach? Anything that you've particularly enjoyed?
Let me think. I've just been on like...
I mean, the answer is probably no, because whenever I have any free time, I'm writing things for the site, Kate. That's the correct answer. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just I've read quite an eclectic assortment of things. Actually, in fact, I just finished reading the first 3 Game of Thrones books, which I...
Oh.
was a...
Talk about getting to the party late on something.
Yeah, right. but that was enjoyable for my cultural literacy. I do watch the show, so, you know, it wasn't that. Out of the loop for me, but that was enjoyable. Usually not a big fantasy guy either, so nice to check out a new genre. I've also, as my Lookout Landing Twitter avatar would suggest, have been on like a total Murakami kick, so I'd like recommend anything by him because he's the man and will win a Nobel Prize in Literature soon, the next couple of years, I would imagine.
I do enjoy Murakami for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice that he just kind of keeps putting the books out. I mean, I feel bad because I haven't read one in years. And every time I turn around, I feel like they've multiplied. There are like 4 or 5 more that I should read.
Yeah.
Very prolific.
Very prolific and kind of like rock star status in Japan anyway. Like his book publication events are always these huge deals and they happen frequently. So it's cool to see a contemporary author of his stature just churn them out and they're all good.
Yeah, I am down for that. Yeah. All right, well, I think we will skip on to Ethan's question, which is Ethan Novak, our staff writer, who asked kind of cruelly, I think, how do we go about cutting down on the number of Zachs on this planet? There are too many Zachs. That's just
that is.
Ethan.
And you know, like, you know, I'm new to the podcast here. Like, I know I'm kind of like off-brand John Troopin with none of the charisma and like all of the just sarcastic witticisms instead. But, you know, that's, I don't know. Not nice, Ethan.
I think we could say you're troopin' a Jace.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as large a person. Like, maybe if we open John Troopin up like a Matryoshka doll style, we could pull out a Zach Milkus.
So I'm like 3/4 Troopin.
Like 3/4 of a Troopin.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
That works for me. And then I could just hide there, you know, as Ethan exterminates the Zachs.
All right. Well, that was excellent. So one final announcement that I would like to make is Lookout Landing is having a Lookout Landing night at the Tacoma Rainiers. We are going to just kind of show up. There's no ticket deal or anything. We're just showing up to the game on August 31st. I'll be there. Zach will be there. John will be there. Several of the other writers. Hopefully a lot of you all. Especially South End people who I know can't always get to the Safe Coast stuff. It's going to be a pretty cool night. It is also record store night, and they'll be playing off of from what is it called? High Voltage, the record store in Tacoma. They will be playing some vinyl from the store. There's going to be a pop-up shop there. They're doing a showing of a Scorsese movie afterwards.
It's, yeah,
It's
The
going to
Last
be like
Waltz.
there's going to
It's a classic.
Yeah, there's gonna be a pretty cool like nerd element strong at that game,
I'm
right?
so ready for that. I'm so ready for that.
I just think there are gonna be a lot of people with really similar interests there that night, and we'll make friends, and it'll be really fun. So there's a post up about it on the website. If you would like to, please just RSVP, leave a comment, let us know if you're planning to attend. Because that way we can kind of get an idea of how many people will be mobbing out at Cheney Stadium. And if you have questions, feel free to like contact me on Twitter or whatever. So that should be big fun. Excited about it. It's the last home game of the season for the Rainiers. It's a little bit bittersweet too.
Yeah, before the entire pitching
And
staff
then.
joins the Mariners soon.
Yes, before half of the Rainiers are Mariners. And then the other exciting piece of news we have to announce is there's going to be a lookout landing night at the Saturday, September 2nd, the game at Safeco against the A's. There's a ticket special for this one, so it's an online only offer. I think it's like $30. Maybe it's 40. I think
I
it's
think it's the
30
same
though.
deal as the Women of Baseball
But
one, right? Or similar
I
game
think it is the
concept.
same deal as the Women's Baseball. Yeah, it's part of the Beyond the Baseline series. So you get a ticket, you get a drink, you get a t-shirt, and you get to come to a panel where you get to hear me talk, which I know you don't get enough of. If you listen to this podcast, you get to hear me
If you're
talk,
now an
you
hour and
get
a
to hear
half into this
John talk.
podcast at this
Yeah,
point.
exactly. Whatever. I'm gonna cut out a lot of the Tiki Torch stuff, okay? Nathan Bishop, who used to edit the site, will be there. Jose Rivero used to be part of the site and now works for the Mariners, the in-game social media coordinator. He'll be there. Colin O'Keefe, who also is an LL alum, who is the digital marketing coordinator for the Mariners now, will be there. And Jerry DePoto is going to be there. And we get to be close to him. I mean, whatever. No, it's fun. We get to ask him questions in a sincere, objective journalist way. And he has already told Colin that this is the most important thing he has going on today, and he will be available for as much time as we would like him. I think as much time as we would like him is still 30 to 40 minutes, but that's a lot of time in Jerry DePoto's
It is. It
world,
is. He
to be
could have
fair.
made like, 30 trades.
17 trades. Yeah,
His
exactly.
trade to
I like
minute
that.
ratio
Let's.
is very high.
So that should be a blast as well. Two different things. Obviously, we'd like to see you at both, but hopefully, you can at least make one. It's going to be big fun and something that we hope to repeat again next year. All right. So that is that for this week. We will talk next week after they will have completed the first leg of this really difficult road trip. Thank you so much to Zach for being with me tonight. I hope you had fun,
I
Zach.
did. Thank you for having me, Kate.
Of course. And thank you to those of you who listen. We always appreciate that. And also sent us questions, which kind of drive the little engine of our podcast along. I'm sorry, I talked about Mark Twain so much. I'll probably cut a lot of that out too. All right. So we will talk to you next week. And until then, go Mariners.
And everybody's saying, don't worry. They say, don't worry.